Welcome to episode number 4 of the Become a Guitarist Today podcast with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I talked to Brett Garsett from the John Farnham Band. Plus, he was also in Nelson, Planet X, and toured with Paul Stanley from Kiss on his solo tour. And he also released 2 albums with TJ Helmrich back in the day when I first met him in 1994. Brett demonstrates some different scales to use while improvising, as well as some of the first riffs he learned when he first started playing guitar. We also talk about his time touring with Paul Stanley from Kiss and how he got the gig. And most importantly, we talk about how he got his nickname Rambo while performing with John Farnham. Now, before we get into the interview, I'd just like to thank all the people that have been downloading and listening to each podcast. Now, to find out more about the podcast and who is coming up on future episodes, check out my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com. That's all one word, becomeaguitaristtoday.com. Or on Facebook, just search for Become a Guitarist Today with Adam Roach podcast. Now, as well as releasing 2 episodes a week for the remaining weeks of August, I'm also giving away one of my books, Become a Guitarist Today, starting from this Saturday. So see the Facebook page for more details. So let's get into the interview with Brett Garsett.
How are you?
Hey, how are you? Yeah, so thanks again for doing this.
Oh, no worries, man. God, man, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, so I figured out, I was trying to figure out the relation, because I don't know if you remember back in 94, you picked myself and my brother up, Darren, and your niece, Kelly, from LA Airport.
That's right, Kelly. That's right, I remember now. Yeah. God, that was a long... Yeah, 94, right?
Yeah, yeah, because we know to do a recording.
Yeah, amazing.
So it figures out... So I spoke to my auntie last night. So your sister, Loris, right?
Yeah.
So her husband, David, is my auntie's uncle.
Oh, okay. There's the connection. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, incredible. 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah. So there we go.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, my brother still remembers. Was it an old, was it Toyota? No, what'd you have back then?
It would have been a Jeep Wagoneer.
Okay.
Like with the wood paneling on the side. I bet that
I think, I'm pretty sure that was
it. Yeah, it probably would have been, yeah.
It was back when we all had the long hair, so it was like a scene out of Wayne's World, really.
It was, yeah. That's right. Oh, God. Those were the days.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they weren't the days. Now are the days, actually. So.
Yeah.
Much happier now.
So. That's good, yeah, for sure. All right. Awesome. Yeah, what age were you when you first started playing guitar?
I think I was about 11. Okay. It might have been 10, but I think it was more like 11. And it was just that thing where my brother originally played guitar. He was 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And he originally played the guitar, and I've got the guitar hanging on the wall, actually. And
not really.
It was a sort of a derivative of a Maton.
Oh, wow.
Semi-acoustic sort of thing,
yeah.
Like it almost looks like a jazz box sort of thing, and it was under the bed, and I used to get it out and look at it. And his record collection was really guitar heavy, like he had lots of Hendrix and Santana, Pink Floyd, but it was actually my brother-in-law that put on Deep Purple in Rock at a party,
okay,
having and just a family get together, and yeah, when I heard the opening licks of Speed King, I just thought, wow, what is this? And my brother said, that's Deep Purple. They're the loudest band in the world. And I went, it's a sale. I'll take it. That It Rock was the very first album I ever bought with my pocket money. So,
oh, wow.
So, but yeah, that was it. And I just kept getting the guitar out and looking at it. And my brother did have an exercise book in there with chord shapes in it that he'd gotten from his teacher many years before.
Okay.
And my other brother-in-law, Greg, showed me how to work those out.
Mm.
And then I just experimented with the thing by, checking out the notes and going, oh, okay, you go this direction and they get higher and they go that way, they get lower. And sense. Just took it from there, really.
Okay. So your main inspiration was probably Blackmore then?
Yeah. And just rock in general, really. Yeah. I mean, look, I was just going through my brother's record collection and just being amazed at the guitar players. I mean, because it was such guitar-focused music.
Mm.
And I remember, I'll take this opportunity to bring something up that I don't think I've ever done in an interview, but I remember sort of lamenting at the fact that Australia didn't seem to have any real guitar heroes.
Mm.
The only Australian music I knew of was the Seekers and stuff like that, just really family friendly sort of stuff. And I guess it wasn't long after that my brother bought it was a 45 single, which I still have, of Masters Apprentices doing Future of Our Nation live. And and I still listen to that like routinely. And I think that was done in 1970 or 71. And man, Doug Ford's playing on that is just, it's as good as anyone anywhere in the world. I mean, it's one of those things where you think about so many great Australian guitar players from that era, from the 60s and the 70s, who should have been up there with Clapton and Hendrix, and they just didn't get heard. So yeah, I just wanted to give Doug Ford a shout out.
Yeah. Well, you probably find that a lot, really, with an Australian guitarist, don't you?
Well, even people like, you know, I know Kevin Borich is a Kiwi, but he's our adopted Australian.
Yeah.
So Kevin Borich or Stuart Fraser, Ian Moss, well, Phil Emmanuel. Tommy's gone on to make himself known, but, you know, John Dalymore, God, the Tony Naylor, the list goes on forever. I mean, so many in the jazz world, like Jim Kelly and people like that, like, huge list of guitar players that should be world renowned, and we know them, and then barely Australians even know them now.
So. Yeah, well, I remember doing a gig with Phil Emmanuel years ago, supporting him in a band at the Old Greek Theatre in Richmond.
Yeah,
and I'd never heard him play before that, and I was just amazed. Wow, you know, I definitely heard Tommy, but heard Phil. Gee, you know, should be up there.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Phil's just sort of, he does his thing. You know, he's not. Tommy's got his path and Phil's got his, you know.
Yeah.
So there it is. But yeah, just they're the unsung heroes, really.
So when you first started, did you learn to read straight away or just picked up?
No music reading, unfortunately. And I sort of fumbled along what might have been for only a few weeks or maybe a few months.
Yep.
And then luckily there was a guy right here in my hometown in Castlemaine, teaching guitar lessons, and his name was Jeff Lyons.
Okay.
And he was quite legendary around here. He was only a young guy, but he was a gun lead guitar player, and I thought that's what I need to learn is lead guitar, because Richie Blackmore, you know. So I ended up taking about four lessons from Jeff.
Okay.
And I think there was a period where I sort of drifted away from it. And then the guitar came back out from under the bed, and I got four lessons that Jeff had given me and started to work on them again. And one of the best lessons was he drew a picture. He said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I'd love to be a lead guitar player."
Yeah.
And the first thing he did was take the fencing wire strings off my guitar and put nice light strings on it. And then he drew a picture of a left hand, and he wrote four fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, four frets. And so that was beautiful. Like right off the bat, he got me using all my fingers.
That's good.
As opposed to just favoring three.
Yep.
Because I would have been disappointed if later years I had to develop that fourth finger.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And then my cousin Andrew came up to visit one day, and I dragged the guitar out and showed him. And he said, "You got a guitar?" And I said, "Oh, I can do better than that." And I played him the four guitar lessons, and he said, "That's it, we're forming a band." So that was the end of that.
Oh, really?
With the knowledge of four lessons from Jeff Lyons, we formed a band. So funny.
What did he play? Was he a drummer? Or?
No, he. I actually ended up selling him that guitar.
Oh.
And I ended up buying a guitar which was made by a company called Sakai or Saki or S-A-K-A-I. I was talking to Brett Kingman about it, and we both had almost the same guitar at the same age. And he suspected it was the same company that made all these horrible guitars and just put different badges on them.
Yeah.
But it had a whammy bar, and I thought, well, this is the next step, you know.
Yep.
And so, yeah, Andrew got the Maton, and I got the horrible Sakai with the whammy bar, which I think I broke within about 2 months. Trying to do too many dive bombs, Andrew ended up being the singer, and then we wrote my cousin Neil into being the bass player, because his older brother Ron Robertson was a professional bass player. And then we got our mutual friend Ken Tanner and said, "You're the drummer, buy a kit of drums, let's get started."
So it's all in the family.
Terrible equipment, no idea whatsoever. We just loved every minute of it. Beautiful.
Yeah, oh, that's great. My brother and I pretty much started the same. Yeah, we just the two of us, he played drums, I played guitar, and then one of his friends said, "Hey, we need a bass player." So learned the bass, and then there we go.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful time when everything is new and exciting and incredible. And you got to hang on to that, I think. Yeah, hang on to that spirit.
Yeah, definitely. Now, do you remember the very first song you learnt, or the first little riff?
Yeah, the first riff I ever learned, I remember it very well. It was Pictures of Matchstick Men by Status Quo.
Okay.
And I actually, that was before I'd taken the lessons. And my brother-in-law, Greg, who showed me how to read those chords, he would tune the guitar every time he came to visit.
Yep.
So the guitar was always kind of in tune. Mm. And I remember we had this, once again, had the 45 single of Pictures of Matchstick Men. And the riff went, went like this. It went... So that's the riff.
Yeah.
I was sitting there listening to it, and I'd look at the guitar, and I'd listen to it, and I'd go, come on, man, it's only a few notes. How hard could it be, you know? And,
yeah.
And so I kept listening to it. I just always had a good ear, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And I just kept... Hey, I found the one.
Yeah.
And I guess from there, I just sort of listened to it and went, well, it sounds like the next note sounds like the same note.
Yeah.
So, and the next note after that sounds lower than that one. So that's it, you know. Yeah. The next note sounds higher. And I couldn't pick it, so I just went, did the hammer on. I was already doing my legato thing. Yeah. But that was the very first song I ever taught myself.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You have to re-record it one day.
Should, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So when you very first started, how long would you practice for?
All day, every day, if I could. As long as – I don't know. I actually remember putting Band-Aids on my fingers.
Oh, really?
I did that. Like, you know, you read that in interviews.
Yeah.
And just the calluses hadn't formed. The fingers were getting sore, but the desire was too strong. You're like, how do I keep going? And actually, I tried it, and, of course, it didn't work. So they came off, and I thought, oh, well, I guess it's just – something you got to deal with as a guitar player. You get sore fingers, and but within a few weeks the calluses turned up and it was okay.
So would you practice on an electric and an acoustic, or just the electric?
All I had was that electric.
Oh, okay.
That my brother had, and then eventually all I had was the cheap, horrible Sakai guitar that I bought.
Yeah.
And you know, when I played that guitar, when you got to the 14th fret, every note went it just fretted out like that.
Oh, no.
Every single string right across the neck. I just thought, oh, well, I guess that's just what guitars do. You know, you don't, you sort of generally avoid that area, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
So I didn't get an acoustic until much later, like maybe 4 years later.
Yeah, so once you got the acoustic, would you practice on that?
Well, like a fool, I went and bought a 12-string. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why, you know, but it was a very good one. I can't remember what the brand was, but it was a good guitar, you know. Mm. I spent a lot of money on it.
Yep.
And I was a big Leo Kottke fan, and I was burning to learn how to play like Leo Kottke.
Okay.
And I guess the rationale was, if I get a 12-string and I get bored with it, I'll just take half the strings off and have a 6-string, but it doesn't really work that way, you know. But I did enjoy playing the 12. And, of course, that's where this finger-picking, hybrid picking thing I do came from, because I was trying to figure out these Leo Kottke tunes with a flat pick and the other three fingers on my right hand, and it was really hard and not working at all. And then it wasn't until, like, so many years later I actually got to see him on TV, and I went, oh, God, he's using a thumb pick, or he's using his thumb.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, you know, the kids just have no idea what a valuable tool YouTube is,
and
cable TV, and just this access to information in a visual sense. Whereas back then, if you weren't lucky enough to see someone on TV or in concert, then you were on your own. You pretty much just had to guess, you know, maybe they're doing it like this, I don't know, you know.
So with the hybrid picking, did you learn that from yourself, or someone actually teach you?
No, I figured that out myself.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was trying to play. I could tell when I was listening to Leo that it was he was using all the fingers on his using other fingers on his right hand.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know that he was using his thumb and those other three fingers, which are stronger.
Yeah.
But then I just noticed one day. I still remember it very vividly when I was practicing and just looking down at the guitar as you do, and my middle finger on my right hand was starting to incorporate playing notes with the flat pick.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, that's interesting, and just carried on. And over time, it just became part of what I did.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until long after that, like pretty much up and up until I joined Farnham's band, that I'd meet other players and they'd bring it up and say, what are you doing? I never took much notice of it. No one around here ever remarked on it. So,
I suppose there weren't many guitarists around there in Castlemaine.
Lots of guitarists, but we were all just as in the dark as each other. Like, it wasn't like there was that one great jazz guitarist we could go to and ask, what's that chord? You know? We all only knew what all of us knew. I went off in a different tangent just because I had access to my brother's albums and my mother, God bless her, my mother really went out on a limb and bought me a Fender Strat very early on, which was a big investment for her. Yeah. But the rationale behind that was, well, if I ever give it up, I won't, but if I ever do, we could sell it for probably what we paid for it.
Yeah.
And much to my credit, I have that guitar in my possession to this day.
Oh, wow. So, oh, look at that.
It's got its neck on it. The old neck's over there. But, I still got that guitar.
Oh, that's excellent.
I kept good on my promise and didn't give up.
So. Yeah, that's really good.
So, I mean, I had a really good guitar to learn on.
Yeah.
And eventually I started off playing through a horrible little Coronet amplifier, which was 5 watts. And it had a tremolo on it, which was the tremolo itself made more noise than the notes coming out of the guitar. It sounded like a motorbike. It was great. Eventually we got rid of that, and my cousin Andrew had a job, so he had the money to throw down for some gear.
Yeah.
So he bought an amplifier made by a company called Jade. I think they were an Australian company.
Sure,
it was a Jade Clubman.
Okay.
And those ants must have been so horrible, I can't even find pictures of them on the internet. I think they've all been destroyed. And then, of course, the dream was to get the Marshall. So I managed to get the most beautiful old 100-watt Super Lead. I think I took the back off it, and on the piece of paper inside on the chassis, it said it was made in 1970.
Oh, right. Wow.
And I got that, and I got the matching slant 412 Marshall cab.
Yep.
And they're both owned by a fantastic guitar player and producer in Melbourne named David Carr.
Okay.
Dave was kind enough to – I was trying to track the amp down to buy it back again because I sold it when I didn't have a brain back in the early 90s. I was living in America when I went insane for a while and sold a beautiful amp.
Yeah.
And I eventually tracked it down, and Dave said, no, I'm not selling it. You can't have it. And I said, don't blame you. Don't sell it.
Yeah.
It's owned and much loved by him now. But I guess that where I was going with that was I just accidentally stumbled across a fantastic guitar tone very early.
Mm.
And I didn't need to worry about tone anymore. I just had it. I had a sound I was in love with, and all I worried about was playing from that moment on. So
that's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I invested no effort in finding a guitar sound after that. I was happy. So
that amp is still sounding the way it did back then?
Oh, even better. Like Dave's done a lot of modifications to it and made it even better. And it's so nice to know it's gone to a home where it's loved and more than I loved it. And he's owned it longer than I ever did. So I often thought, I suppose that, it probably got stolen and beat up, or who knows what happened to it.
Yeah,
I was overjoyed to find out that it's in a good home.
Yeah, that's great. So have you ever taught guitar?
What's that? Taught guitar?
Yeah, like...
I just taught lessons today, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Still teaching now. And when I was living in America, I taught at Musicians Institute.
Yeah, I remember that.
GMT, so...
Yeah.
So
like private lessons, are you still doing that?
Yeah, if people are interested. Usually people just come for one lesson and that's it, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
So, and I can't teach beginners, not because I don't want to, but I can't remember how to, I've been teaching young kids, especially how to play the guitar as a real art form, like how to get them to manage it with smaller hands and what to start them on and get them interested and keep them interested. Like, I'm definitely not qualified to do that at all.
Yeah. So. That's pretty much what I do now.
Oh, well, you must be very good at it. It's a skill, all right.
So. Yeah. So do you have like a favorite exercise that you like to teach, your students, or even for yourself, just to practice as a warm-up type thing?
No, not really. My style of playing is an exercise in itself for me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's so idiosyncratic that if I don't stay on top of it, like it just falls away really quickly. And I wouldn't even actually hazard to guess that I'm on top of it right now. I've got a lot of time off over the next few weeks, so I'm going to really get into some hardcore practice get stuck back into that. So, but no particular exercises. Whenever someone comes for a lesson, I usually try to tailor the lesson to their personal needs as much as possible. So I definitely don't say, well, forget about everything you're doing. Here's how I do it.
I
figure half the time if they've tracked me down, they must like something about what I do. So we talk about that.
Yeah, that's good. So just more work on techniques and
look, you know, what I work on now is what I should have worked on when I was 15, which is perhaps alternate picking, chordal playing and stuff like that. So, yeah, a lot of the things I work on that I find challenging, most young kids would be able to wipe the floor with me. So just alternate picking. I never did it and I never really felt like I needed to, but, I do need to. So I work on that a lot and improvisation and, just always trying to get better at just physically playing the instrument, which I do think changes as you get older. You know, I'm in my mid-50s now, so it's a challenge to get the hands warmed up and keep them warmed up, I got to say.
Yeah, for sure.
Those fingers aren't as fleet as they used to be.
Did you ever study classical guitar?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. When I was about 18... just before I turned 18, I tracked down a great classical teacher in Bendigo named Don Charlton.
Okay.
And because Richie Blakemore studied classical.
Mm.
I thought, well, if Richie did it, I've got to do it.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, what I really needed to find was a good jazz teacher, because that's what I was interested in, improvisation and how to improvise in varying situations. And really, a really good jazz teacher would have helped. And after I studied with Don for nearly a year, and it was great. Like I loved the classical music, and at least it introduced me to that beautiful music.
Mm.
But I knew straight away that unless I dedicated my life to it, I was never going to do it justice.
Yeah.
And also my hand stretch is really bad. Like I just couldn't navigate some of the songs because I didn't have the hands for it. By the time I'd got the note, I'd pulled the guitar hopelessly out of tune. So it was a real problem for me. And eventually Don left to go overseas, and I moved on to study with a lovely gentleman named Hank Monfroy. And Hank was a jazz guitarist, but the only trouble was, in hindsight, once again, if I'd met Hank now, I would have eaten it up. I would have just loved it. I would have said, Hank, take me to jazz world, you know. But he was from the Eddie Lang school, so it was pretty much all chords.
Yep.
And not really improvisation, like it was more about company. And because Hank was quite a bit older, he did not want to know anything about rock guitar or modern guitar even. And in fact, maybe if I'd even walked in and said Joe Pass, he might have said, nah, not into that, you know.
Yeah.
Or Pat Thini, he would have said, nah, don't know those guys. So if I'd been able to find a guitarist who was right in the Joe Pass school, I think that would have been perfect, but alas, it didn't happen.
Yeah. So would you have any tips for any upcoming guitarists, you know, one to learn now, or even just to get into improvising more at the advanced people?
My recommendation would be, it's kind of like, especially to a younger person, it's kind of like eat your vegetables in a way, you know, it's like, and you know, learning to read music stuff. I used to say this to the guys at MI a lot.
Yep.
Because I'm still a very poor music reader. I mainly survive by ear and that sort of stuff. And I said, look, fellas, you're paying all this money to come to this school.
Mm.
Like, and I know you all just want to rock out and shred, but, you know, work hard on your reading. It's why you're here, like everything. And, you know, the amount of rock guys who would be in my room, and you'd hear Scott Henderson at the end of the hallway. And, and they're going, so, you know, this guy, he's pretty good, huh? I said, oh, yeah, he's very good. I think he should go down there and sit in his room, you know. I say to them, like, don't, you know, I know you love rock, but go learn from the jazz guys, you know. Get as much information as you can. Be the sponge. And you'll only regret it when you leave. So, yeah, to any young players, like, I know your teacher's forcing you to read music, or I hope they are.
Mm.
And, take it on. Take it on board. Learn it now. Get it under your fingers. You will never regret it. It'll be one of the greatest assets to your life, and it won't affect your ability to be a rock god or you know, write songs or anything like that. It'll only help it.
Yeah.
So that's my advice. Yeah. Listen to your teacher. Take it on board. Get it done.
Now, as far as for improvising, I don't know, how this is going to work. But so for someone to come
there's always a time lag with you with Skype.
Yeah, I know. If I just hold the chords.
Yeah.
So if I did something in E, for example, and so we're talking about improvisation for the kids.
Yeah.
What would be your first thing to say? Okay, so if I was the first thing to do, I guess.
The first thing I'd say is the interesting thing is that chord voicing you've chosen has no third.
Yes.
So it's an open... that's the thing. It's like, because a lot of times we don't think about that. Like,
yeah.
It's completely open harmonically. It can be major, minor, any color you like. So that's the first thing I'd say about it is like, wow, this is your dream situation. You can make it anything you want.
So, yeah.
That's the first thing I'd say as well. You can play minor pentatonic, major pentatonic. And it can be a major, minor, or any variation of that. So that's the first thing I think when I hear a situation like that. It's like, oh, okay, no one's really defining what it is, so it's great. It's wide open. Have fun.
That's good. Good little tip.
The other thing. You talk about too, like when you played the major chord, when I said there was no third.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, because if you play straight major, now there's no defining six or seven, so you've got more possibilities there. So I think, I think that's sort of an interesting sort of revelation to a lot of young players. It's only very specific chord voicings that sort of dictate what you should play. So yeah, if it's major, just straight major, then you could play Mixolydian, you could play Lydian. There's a lot of latitude there as well.
Head on over to becomeaguitaristtoday.com. From there, you can become a member for the month of August for only $40 and receive a free book, Become a Guitarist Today by Adam Roach. Also, from the original band Busted Up, their latest CD. You can also get access to the closed Facebook group, Become a Guitarist Today, where there are thousands of lessons updated weekly, and ask any questions you want that will be answered. So head on over to becomeaguitaristtoday.com. That's all one word, becomeaguitaristtoday, no spaces.com.
I do have a question from a listener who's actually my brother, Darren.
Okay.
No, he's a huge Kiss fan. So he just wanted to know about your time with Paul Stanley, how that all came about, and how'd you find that?
The gig came about because, I don't know if you remember, there was that show, it was called Rockstar.
Yeah, I remember the one.
And we were in Excess, we're looking for a singer, and then they tried to form a super group with Tommy Lee and...
Yep.
Gilbert Clark and Jason Newsted, and they were looking for a singer for that sort of thing. And they had the same band. It was Paul Merkovich was the keyboard player and musical director of that band.
Okay.
And I worked with Paul Merkovich when we did the Nelson gig many years ago. And Paul Stanley was sitting at home watching those shows with great interest, and he said, I couldn't care less about NXS or that other band they were going to form. I just wanted the backing group. You know,
oh, really?
He just watched the show and went, that is the most amazing rock band. I want them. I'm going to do an album. So he grabbed the whole band, and I can't remember who the rhythm guitarist was in the band. The lead guitarist was Rafael Morea, who I met when I was teaching at Musicians Institute.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who the rhythm guitarist was, but he was sensational and great. Great singer too. And he was coming to Australia to tour with Paul, and he couldn't do it, so he was taken off the tour with Chris Avril Lavigne or someone like that. And so Paul Merkovich asked me if I'd like to do the Australian tour.
Okay. And
I just played rhythm guitar and had to do a lot of backing vocals, and I said, oh man, I'd love to. So I went over to LA, and Paul and Raphael and I went up to Paul Stanley's house.
Yep.
And that's where I first met him. And I have to say, Paul Stanley is one of the nicest gentlemen you will ever meet in this world, let alone in rock and roll. What a fantastic guy. Like, I've got a real barometer for stars and how they treat people. And, you know, there's Olivia Newton-John, John Farnham, and now Paul Stanley are probably the three most high-profile people I've ever met, worked with for any length of time. And they're all wonderful people. So, yeah, if I don't care who it is, if they're arrogant, I got no time for them, you know. So, Paul's just awesome. What a great bloke. And, we just went up to his house and ran all the tunes and made sure I knew what I was doing. And then we rehearsed for about 5 days in LA. And then we all flew to Australia and did the tour. And it was just a blast.
Yeah. So, that his solo songs and plus Kiss songs? Or
yeah. Yep. Which was interesting because I always really liked Kiss, but I was never a fan in the sense that I went and bought albums. I just enjoyed hearing them when I heard them.
Yeah.
So I only ever heard the hits. And so, you know, a song like Strutter was a brand new song to me. I was okay. I couldn't really tell how many of those songs were new songs off the new album.
Oh, really?
or old songs off the Kiss catalogue or old songs from Paul's solo stuff. So it was kind of nice in a way. So I didn't judge any of the tunes. This is a Kiss classic. Oh, I don't know this song. It's a new song. It's like, as far as I was concerned, they were all pretty much, except for the hits, like I Was Made for Loving You and Love Gun, and, you know, and I knew Strutter was a Kiss tune. I just never heard. And I was blown out that a lot of the new tunes, I put them up there with the Kiss classics as far as how I felt about them. So, he's a great songwriter.
Yeah, that would have been great. So it was just the Australian tour you said. You did?
Yeah, I didn't do any overseas stuff. They'd already done an extensive American tour, and they just had about 2 weeks of gigs here in Australia, so I did those.
Yeah. Now, next question I have for you is about performing with John Farnham. Now, with Burn For You, is that one of your most, like, nerve-wracking songs to play live? Being you, the acoustic, everyone knows the notes.
Well, I find it nerve-wracking because it's not what I do. You know, I'm not a... It's sort of funny how that came about because I was still living in America and John was going to do a tour in 1994. It was the Talk of the Town tour because they just released the album Then Again. But of course, Burn For You was on the Chain Reaction album just a year prior, or the album previous to that. And I remember his then tour manager rang me up and said, "Can you do the tour?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." And he said, "Okay, so here's the list of songs." And he said, "There's an acoustic tune called Burn For You. Learn that because you've got to play that with John." And I was like, "Okay." And so I sort of learned it as best I could, as close as I could to Phil Buckle's version. And when I came back to do the tour, it was the first time I met Chong Lim and also Stuart Fraser because they just joined the band. And so anyway, I learned the song and we rehearsed it and we were doing it. And then just before one of the gigs while we were on the road, there was an acoustic sitting backstage and Stuart picked it up and they started playing Beatles songs and we were just singing. And I'm watching Stuart and how masterful he is on – he's such a beautiful acoustic player. And I'm just going, why isn't this guy playing? You know, so it's weird. In a way, it went to the wrong guy. Like Stuart probably should have got that Guernsey, but it was just as it worked – as it turned out, I ended up playing it. And But I guess as it – luckily, if I was going to play any song on acoustic, that song's sort of right up my alley. Such a beautiful song, Phil Buckle's chords and everything. I tried to get him as close as I could. I should have just rang Phil up, and because he's a friend of mine, I should have rang him up and said, "Can you teach it to me?" and learned it properly. But over the years, I guess it's just morphed into my version of it.
So. Yeah. I mean, I've played it with my sister. She's a singer as well. So we've done another couple of gigs and hadn't played it for a long time. And then we had a request for it. And I was playing through it, and my mind just went blank.
What's that
next chord? You know, so.
I've never gone blank.
Yeah.
And that's because I practice it to death. I've practiced that thing because I would be mortified.
Yeah.
Although John would probably love it because he'd be able to get 5 minutes of gags out of it. Because John's wonderful like that. Like, he knows that we're only human, you know. I mean, and things happen, you know. Gear goes wrong, and, you know, you meant that fret and you went to that one, you know. It happens. So. Yeah. So, and he's great like that. He's not the sort of guy that'll chew you out backstage or anything, but the deal is, if I can get a gag out of it, you're fair game, brother. It's like, so, you know, I take that. That's okay.
Yeah.
But, no, I remember we were doing a promo tour through Asia back in 96, and out of the blue, someone requested Burn For You.
Okay.
And I hadn't played it in a long time, and it was one of those great moments where I played the right phrase but a half step up. And it was on radio too. It was just a live gig. So I think he just thought it was funny. But I was so mortified that I did that. I vowed it will never happen again. So it hasn't.
That's good. Now, something else I want to talk to you about, sort of guitar related. It's also in the Farnham days where your first known as Rambo back in the day. because of your hugeness. Now, one day, because I have a lot of students that come up, so sorry, I haven't practiced, martial arts, I've had this, I've had that, whatever. So how did you find time to keep in shape, plus do all your gigs and everything else?
Well, I guess the curve of this whole story is I was never a really athletic kid. I tried to get into the football team, but they wouldn't let me play. And then I discovered music and I just forgot about it. But I was a bit concerned about gaining weight because I really like food. I'm a real food guy. And I was a bit concerned about that and I hated running and all that sort of stuff. So a friend of mine turned me on to weightlifting. Hmm. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. You actually have quite a bit of control over what you look like and how your body is. And then we all started doing powerlifting as a sport. So then we were all a gang of us doing it. It was really good fun. We'd all get together and a strange sport to get involved in, but I really enjoyed it. So I just became part of what I did, and so when we're on the road, I just look for gyms and go and keep it up. Oh. And the Rambo thing, very funny. I remember it was the very first tour I'd ever done with John. I was backstage after the gig and I was just wearing a tank top. Yeah. It was middle of summer, we're playing in these hot pubs, wear little as you could, really. And I'm wearing this tank top with Mambo written on it. Brand tank top. And Steve Housden from Little River Band was backstage and he looked at it and he said, what's that say on your tank top, Rambo? John's heard it and just gone, that's you from now on. Rambo from now on. And then when we started doing bigger gigs and I thought I'd ham it up a bit, so I put a headband on and all that sort of stuff. I think it kind of helped to go into character a bit to sort of set the nerves aside. So.
No, that's really good.
It was just sort of one of those things I really enjoyed doing. But over the years, I've phased it out,
Yeah. So. I mean, because back then, it's very rare that you see any guitarists. They're all skinny, long hair, like myself was back then. Unless you're in a band like Manowar or something,
Exactly, yeah. It was funny because Kane Roberts was playing with Alice Cooper back then. And Kane... Yeah. And he was like a pro bodybuilder. He looked huge. He was enormous. And then when I joined the Nelson band, Bobby Rock, the drummer, Bobby was a mad weight fanatic, and he still is. I mean, Bobby's the same age as me, and he looks unbelievable. doesn't look any different than he did back when he was 25. It was just that was a coincidence too, that I always sort of ended up socializing with people that had an interest in physical fitness. I do keep it up. I'm still really fit, but there's no way I'm lifting the weights I used to, for sure.
Yeah. Now, as far as now what you're doing, so you're in between tours, John Farnham?
Yeah, in between gigs, really. Did all the Red Hot Summer gigs with John, and then I ended up doing a really interesting tour with Chong Lim and the rest of the guys, where we played Elvis tunes.
Oh, really?
Where Elvis is on the screen. Mm. It's all footage from the 1970s Las Vegas era.
Yep.
And we played the songs. So James Ryan played guitar on that as well. So,
oh, okay.
So that was actually fun because we had Elvis's voice, and it was all from a live gig.
Yeah.
And back in those days, James Burton was the guitar player. So, Elvis would cue the solo and say, "Play it, James." And I'll go, James Ryan, and go, "Well, play it, James." Elvis is asking you, man. You better not upset the king.
Yeah, figured out well.
So, yeah, it was very interesting. I love doing that.
Yeah. And how about any other solo projects for yourself?
Not at the moment. I should get back into the writing frame of mind and see if I can come up with stuff. If I was just going to say I think I'll do another album, I could write tunes, But I don't know. I feel like there's so many guitar albums out there that are just superfluous. Like they don't sound any different to anyone else's guitar albums. And there's just this ridiculous glut of them out there. And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to be part of the problem. If I can't come up with anything that's somehow unique or original or different to what I've already done, then what's the point? I don't want to just do it because I think it's an easy way to make some cash out of people. I want to make sure that the integrity's in it. And also that I can listen to it 10 years from now and go, man, I did a good job on that. So, I'll have to wait and think about what I want to do and how I want to do it. And if I can come up with something that inspires me, then I'll go with it.
Yeah. So if you were to do something, still be at the fusion, you think?
Well, it would definitely involve that aspect because I love playing over chord changes. So, it would definitely have that element to it. Yeah. It might not necessarily be a straight fusion thing. Like my first album, Big Sky, was quite organic because I wrote a lot of those tunes almost as chord melody type things on an acoustic.
Okay.
And then the second album, Dark Matter, I wanted to have a bit more fun and go heavy because I'd never done that before. I'd never played like really heavy sort of metal riffs like I did when I did the Planet X stuff with Virgil Donati and Derek Sherinian. And so that was fun. And it was sort of a bit more progressive rock in a way.
But
rather than do either of those two things again, like I'll try and think of something else and see if I can keep it fresh, keep it interesting.
You ever done anything with vocals yourself?
No, not really. I keep getting colds and my voice keeps going, so I don't know. If I could get my voice to where it was really strong and I felt like it was worthy of that, I'm certainly not going to just sing on something for the sake of it. You sound like, I work with some of the best singers in the world, so my standards are way up there. You know, if it's not great, then don't do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's so many great guitar players, like Richie Kotzen, Joe Bonamassa, Jack Jones or Erwin Thomas. And the James Ryan turned me onto this great band called Big Wreck. Have you heard of them?
No.
Wow. Yeah, their guitar player, Ian Thornley, their guitar player, singer.
Okay.
Boy, I'm an amazing guitarist and sings like Chris Cornell. Like just, wow. Oh, really? So there's your standard, you know. And Gary Moore, Ian Moss, Diesel, people like that. There are so many great guitar player singers. Steve Lukather, the guy I could go on for hours. And I think, well, you know, I don't want to do an injustice to that great legacy. Like if I can't get it up to where my singing's as good as my playing, I won't bother with it.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That's good. So basically, with your other solo projects you have done, where can people find that?
The best place to get them is from my website. They're all just my two albums are on there. My instructional DVD's there, and you can buy them as a package deal if you want. And the other stuff is, it's all out there, you know, all the Derek Sherinian stuff, the Planet X stuff. And the only albums that are hard to find are the albums I did with TJ Helmrich, because Legato Records, the company, went out of business. And the amount of money that Mark Varney wanted me to pay to buy the rights back for those albums, I just couldn't justify it, you know. Yeah. I never would have made my money back, so... So I guess you just got to hear them on YouTube and that's that.
Yeah, actually, I think I'm lucky enough to have that CD when I met you in 94, so pretty sure I've got it somewhere at home.
I've got one copy of each.
Oh, really?
my very first instructional video, I don't even have a copy of that.
Oh, wow.
And that's the same thing. It's out of print. And I asked Warner Brothers, Warner Chappell it was, and I asked them if I could buy the rights to it so I could re-release it as a DVD. And they said, no, we don't do that. And I said, are you going to re-release it? And they said, no, we don't do that either. So it stays locked in a vault somewhere gathering dust, digital dust.
That's pretty much everything I need to ask you. So unless you've got any other sponsors you want to thank or anything?
Guitar sounds you heard were coming out of the Fractal X8, so you know, thanks to them for helping me out. Their gear is so incredible. It seems to be the way of the future these days, you know. Like when we were doing the Red Hot Summer gigs, James Rain was on the bill as well, and Brett Kingman plays with James, and Brett's been a long time Fractal user, I was picking his brains about, you know, how he runs it and everything. So one of these days, it might be no more guitar amps.
That's right. That's great. Thanks very much again for this, and I'll put that link up so people can get onto your site.
Oh, thanks, Adam. That's awesome.
Yeah, no worries.
Pleasure to do it. Thanks for asking. All right, thanks, Adam.
No worries. Thanks, Brett.
Cheers.
See you later. Bye. I want to quickly thank two sponsors. The first one is Custom Guitar Picks, run by Gus. This is one of the quickest service you'll find for custom-made picks. And you can do it all online. Design your own picks. Just head to customguitarpicks.com.au. There you can select the thickness of your pick, the colour, what type of pick you want, You can also upload your own artworks, then submit it online, and it's all done. You can also check out the different categories of other picks to choose from. The other sponsor is Guitar World, run by Mick. Guitar World used to be a shop in the High Street, Northcote. Now Mick is concentrating on repairs, services, and setups. So Mick has been doing all my services for the past 20 years on all my guitars, and every time I get it back, it feels like a brand new guitar. So call Mick on 0476 937 025. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Brett Garsett and picked up a few tips on improvising. On Saturday, I'll be interviewing an Australian iconic legend, Russell Morris. So I hope you can join me then and check out the Facebook page to win a free book, Become a Guitarist Today. So until Saturday, keep jamming.